Hello, everyone. My name is Joshua Gilliland. With me is Jessica Meterson, and we are the Legal Geeks. Jessica?
Hey there, Josh. Happy holidays. How are you?
Merry Christmas. I am well. I'm in my traditional Christmas outfit because doesn't everyone wear an ascot and a blazer during the holidays?
Sure. In Northern California, where that's adequate, here in the wonderful Midwest, we have to dress up a little bit. So I've got my scarves, I've got my big sweaters, I've got snow pants and snow boots and snowshoes so the kids and I can enjoy our little Christmas vacation with the family. So,
how is it riding the tauntaun to work?
I know. I'm like, please. That would be such, it's such LA people who put that one together. It's like, look at it. It's so cold. It's so awful. I'm like, whatever, people. I'm from Minnesota. Hot does not impress me at all.
Yeah, but frostbite should. So
frostbite should, but you know, it actually does take longer. According to my dad, I've never verified this on my own, but my dad has proven himself right on these things. During the Korean War, they found that they would send out like two army infantry guys, whatever, to, you know, do security, walk around the base, whatever you do, in the winter in Korea there, which I guess could get pretty harsh and cold. And they would come back and they would find that one of the army guys would have frostbite and the other one wouldn't. And they're like, what's going on? What's the difference? They found that if you were born in the extreme north, and I don't know how far north you have to go, but I know where I was, grew up in northern Minnesota, is extreme north. If you spent your first like 10 to 12 years in a very northern climate, you actually basically had an extra layer of fat, even if it does not look like it on the outside, to keep you warm. So frostbite even is harder for a native of the north to get than it is somebody who grew up, let's say, in the south.
Well, hopefully we won't need to test that again if there's another Korean War. So
hopefully not, although that actually segues nicely into like some of the pop culture stuff that's going on right now. Holy cow, I can't believe Hollywood is now canceling movies that either one were about to be launched, or in the case of the Steve Carell like thriller that was coming up, just a prospective movie about North Korea. This is pretty insane.
Spineless is a good word. We have parody for a reason. And now watching Family Guy last night and the outright insults to Christianity that was in there. First Amendment, you don't see Christians out on the street protesting Fox. You don't see...
Well, to be fair, sometimes people do protest even here in the U.S., but protest is okay and protest is allowed. There's a difference between protests, and to be fair, there are people who protest Family Guy and other shows a lot. The difference is threatening to, like, conduct acts of terrorism, cyber or physical, because you don't like how you or your leaders are portrayed, right? I mean, somebody is pointing out, you know, there were things during, like, we had the Russian Cold War where we were, you know, on the brink of a nuclear winter, and yet there were all kinds of movies showing Russians as bad guys at the time. So this whole idea, and of course all it does now is like, okay, well, anyone who's ticked off at the way someone in Hollywood, you know, depicts them, boom, we're going to hack into your stuff and threaten to release these embarrassing emails. So it's pretty wild.
It's pretty insane. I mean, when you look at, oh, Charlie Chaplin and the Dictator, you know, I mean, like that, there were threats over that and they went ahead anyway. So this is, it's like, I had no desire to see the interview. None. Because I saw the previews and went like, oh, that looks kind of stupid. Not my thing. There are those who absolutely love that, and that's cool, but it's like not my bag. And so I really wasn't going to spend Christmas Day seeing that. But now it's like, really? You cancel a movie? Really bad precedent.
It is a bad precedent because now this is going to happen anytime. Yeah, it's really nuts. I do have to say, though, the flip side, the lawyer part of me, I know, you know, and I think there are legitimate arguments that have been raised about none of us should be reading these Sony hacked emails. They are a victim of crime. It's just like I refuse to look at any of the, you know, the nude photos that were released in those other hack attacks and everything. But I have to admit, I did read some of these emails because I do love inside Hollywood stuff. And the thing that struck me, and I think this is it, this makes my pitch much more, it makes more of an impression, I guess. I give this speech all the time when I'm talking about e-discovery and attorney-client privilege. I'm like, people, use the phone, because you can say those same words in a phone conversation. The odds of anyone knowing about that, unless Linda Tripp is on the other side, you know, those are never going to come back to bite you in the butt. I say, but you put this stuff in email. Ever since I became an attorney, and as part of doc review, you look at other people's emails sometime, I have always been aware that every word I put into an email, there's a good chance that somebody somewhere will read that who was not the intended recipient. And so I was thinking about that. I'm like, gosh, you know, all these Sony executives, or all the executives now should realize, be careful what you put in the email, because someday it will get out somewhere. Hopefully not through a hack, preferably in litigation, preferably where I represent one of the parties. But
well, I was thinking about this from the breach notification point of view. And what Sony has gone through is the equivalent of a digital Pearl Harbor, because every computer there is fried. They can't use it anymore. So that means they have to replace all the hardware, or at least wipe everything. And I don't even know if wiping everything would take care of it. In theory, not a computer expert, but I would hope that would at least do it. But they have to go out and replace everything.
Yeah.
Every employee, everyone who's ever interviewed with them, with all the personal identifiable information that's been put out there, and medical, There are breach notification requirements between the different states that they
own. It's a nightmare, yes. It's certainly, if for any reason they have credit card information, there are whole things there. You're right, any HIPAA, any kind of medical thing. Different states have different regulations. It will take lawyers, hordes and hordes of lawyers, years to straighten out and unravel all the legal ramifications of the hack. And then, like you pointed out, there's a whole IT side that I can't even begin to speak to. It is massive and it is sad, but by canceling the movie, they've just now encouraged that this will more likely happen again, unfortunately. So,
yeah, it's a bad precedent.
And they give in to a megalomaniac, which is always a shame.
Yeah, because it's only going to encourage him further. So
yes. That being said, it did give Mike Myers a chance to resurrect his Dr. Evil persona on Saturday Night Live this past weekend, and that was really good. So that was, I thought at least I'm like kind of, you know, NBC or Lorne Michaels at least was poking fun. Like, we'll poke the tiger. We're not afraid.
Yeah, God bless them for having a backbone.
Yes.
And that was good. Calling him Kimberly was also good. So
yes.
It's like, good. All right. I've missed you. Thank you for coming back. Mr. Giggles was there and it was glorious. So
speaking of which, you've got a whole little Dr. Evil persona going on there. Let's see your little pet.
Yes, yes.
Demand $1 million from somebody, Josh.
Wilson and I want $1 million. Oh, that's dog sitting in Atherton. That actually would be easy in this neighborhood. I think it's the most expensive one in the United States. Driving home the other night after going to the grocery store, the houses here are castles. They are super impressive. One of them had like a 60, 70-foot Christmas tree outside, decorated in lights. Not the tree wasn't 70 feet tall, but the light decorations going up in this big tree, making a Christmas tree shape. I mean, cranes had to come in and do that. It's like, on one level, if I could do that, I would. But it's a scale that that I will not have in my savings account in near future unless I marry up. So that's,
yes, and to me, I just hear too much disposable income, and this is why we should tax the rich more. So
there are all kinds of weird things going on here. But yeah, this is
Chris Rock said. He's like, if the poor really knew how the really rich in America and actually in other parts of the world too live now, he's like, there would be a revolution, because it is insane.
It is.
But we will get away from that. Otherwise, I'll get into a whole thing. So we will stay away from that. Let's focus instead on legal geek stuff and our Christmas wishes for next year. So we did this last year. It's a fun thing to look forward to what's happening, what we want in geek culture, pop culture, maybe a little bit of law tossed in, although less than usual because it's Christmas and I'm supposed to be on vacation. So Josh, what's one of your wishes for next year?
Many things. So there are a lot of good things coming up. This year had a lot of fun stuff to it. It had a lot of weird stuff to it as well. But from a TV point of view, I'm really optimistic about Agent Carter. Previews look good. Marvel keeps making magic happen with everything they do. So I'm cautiously optimistic Agent Carter will be a lot of fun. So that's one wish.
That is my number one geek wish for this next year, obviously, is that Agent Carter do well. I really am hoping, and Marvel is doing well, and I have to say I'm really enjoying like Goddess of Thunder so far. So they are doing a little bit better, I think, in the comic book world about really putting together some compelling female heroes. And so obviously, you know, I want to see that reflected more in the movies. Obviously, we have Captain Marvel coming out, but that's not, I think that's 2018. Is so, that how far away it is?
Yeah, oh. Which could get us.
This I would is, like something before that, thank you.
So, which is a nice segue to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has had a wonderful sophomore year. A lot of great things have happened. You know, the funk will never die. So it's so I'm very sad about Trip, but the funk will never die. I have a theory because starting the Inhumans arc now in 2014, we have a lot of time until 2018. That's also assuming that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last that long.
But that's another wish.
That's another wish, but that's a lot of lead time.
Yeah.
So I would hope by going into the Kree city that was on Earth, which really should not have looked that ancient if it's supposed to be an advanced city, but this is a TV show with a budget, so I get why it was all dark and you didn't see much. I would hope that would send an alarm to the Kree Empire, because if you're going to build a giant alien city on Earth millions of years ago, you think you would put an alarm system in there.
And I would assume so, yes.
So the fact that they enter it triggers the alarm, and the Kree send an expeditionary force to find out what's going on. That could be a great way to introduce the Kree Captain Marvel, upon whom Captain Marvel took her name, and have his story arc in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because when he first came out, he was spying on Earth.
Right.
So it could fit very well having him in the green and white uniform, looking like Walt Lawson when he needed to, and have it be a tri-party, you know, approach of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Hydra, and then the Krees on Earth figuring out what's going on, because they won't know which side is good from evil.
Right.
And so they'd be a third player. So that could be one way to address some of the Captain Marvel background without it distracting from the movie in 2018, because being a fan of the old comics, the current Captain Marvel took the original's uniform design, and there's a lot of the history of what it means to be Captain Marvel kind of mixed into it. So okay. I would hope that they just don't ignore the history, but you don't, in the first female-led movie that Marvel's doing, they can't have it be a distraction from the female lead.
Right.
So
that's true.
Because that would devalue it. So
you're right. That is why we have to hope Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stays on, because it does give the depth and the backstory to those of us who want that much detail. You are right. That is a great way to do it. And I'm sure, given Disney's might, that even I haven't looked at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s ratings lately, but even if their ratings weren't great, I'm sure Disney could keep it on for the role of, you know, they don't look at it as just a standalone. They look at its role in the overall Marvel universe. Speaking of the overall Marvel universe, a big thing that's coming up for next year, one of my holiday wishes is that James Spader as Ultron is as delicious and awesome a villain as he seems in the trailer so far. I think that is the best voice work, the perfect villain's voice. I love him in the trailers. I listen to them over and over again, and I just hope the actual villain in the actual movie lives up to that potential.
Have you read any of the Avengers comics with Ultron in it?
No.
Okay, he is one of their most lethal foes ever.
Ooh, all right.
So, And the fact that he's gone from basically an undying robot because he's an AI that can, you destroy one shell, it then goes to another body that they have lined up.
And nice.
He eventually also turns into a virus, so basically can affect other computers. So lots of stuff there. I mean, the haunting voice, you know, with the Pinocchio music.
Yes.
It's like, whoa, I really want that to be good too.
Oh, I hope it is. The music creeps out my son. He does not like that music at all. But yeah, no strings on me, the whole thing. I'm like, oh my God, his voice is just fantastic. So I've, you know, liked James Spader ever since he played kind of the teen villain in teen movies through some of his different odd characters. But this, I'm like, this could be his best work yet.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. And we'll get to see the Vision. So that will be good. It'll be interesting to see how they do the origins of each, because in the comics, Hank Pym is the creator of Ultron, who will be in the Ant-Man movie coming out.
I didn't know there was that connection.
Yeah, and so Hank Pym creates Ultron. In the movies, it looks like they're going to do it differently, with Stark creates Ultron drones, or Tony Stark will be the origin of Ultron.
All right, which makes sense, because he says something in one of the trailers about he put them on this path, and I didn't get what he meant by that. So, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, then he's also funding the Avengers as a private global security force, and the downfall of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, now granted, that's what the rumors and the hype are saying, so...
I know, spoiler alert, we should have said spoiler alert, sorry people.
But the fact that in Captain America we see Stark Tower, which now has the giant A on it for Avengers Tower, so because that was the only thing left.
I totally did not make that connection. I'm really bad at making those connections.
Yeah, it was very quick. And so it was very quick. So it's okay that you missed it. When I saw it in the theater, if you blink, you miss it.
All right.
So it's very, very quick.
Okay, so Age of Ultron, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, gosh, we have all A's. Josh, do you have a wish for Christmas that isn't an A? Ooh, Ant-Man even, holy cow, they were all A's.
Yeah.
We did not intend that, people. It was just a happy coincidence.
Yeah, I was about to say Ant-Man. So Ant-Man, Hank Pym is one of the founding members of the Avengers in the comics.
Okay.
He also goes through probably the most superhero personas out of anyone, because he's Ant-Man, he's Giant Man, he's Goliath, he's Yellow Jacket, he's Dr. Pym, and...
Pym's Cup?
He's then Wasp.
Gosh, you missed my line. Pym's Cup? Is he Pym's Cup ever? Come on!
No.
We're going to be here. English drinks. Come on, people. That's cocktail humor.
That's well played. And then I think back to Giant Man in the current run of the comics. So, like, he's gone through a bunch.
Wow.
Being able to shrink, to grow. Well, in this, Michael Douglas is playing him, and he's old. So,
because I thought Paul Rudd was playing him.
He is. So Paul Rudd is playing Scott Lang, who's the second Ant-Man.
Oh, okay.
And so the way that they're doing the backstory is Wasp, Janet Van Dyne, is gone, dead. They do have their daughter, who doesn't exist in the comics, so that's the way that they created a female lead.
Okay.
Opposite of Ant-Man. So I don't know if they'll have her be the Wasp or not, or just be her. So I don't know. So they have a couple options there. But that's been filming in San Francisco, and I really hope it's good. So
I do too. And, you know, again, it's kind of interesting. That's what Marvel does well. I mean, even Robert Downey Jr., who now everyone, you know, he is Iron Man. He was not somebody, especially back in like back to school days, that you would have picked as a superhero. Chris Pratt, Andy, my beloved Andy on Parks and Recreation, you would not have picked him to be a superhero. And Paul Rudd, and I have adored Paul Rudd ever since Clueless, and then in his great run on Friends with Phoebe, you know, I have, well, I'm 40-year-old virgin and was playing video games with Seth Rogen and everything. I mean, I've always adored Paul Rudd, but again, not what you would picture as a superhero. But that's what Marvel has done a really good job, kind of taking these sort of quirky, adorable guys and turning them into superheroes, as opposed to kind of the 80s, you know, Bruce Willis, Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of heroes. So I like that.
Which can is a nice segue for one of my other hopes for 2015 would be Terminator Genesis. And so when,
speaking of Arnold.
So when I first heard the premise of Terminator Genesis, I was like, oh, that sounds stupid. Oh, Matt Smith's in it. Okay, maybe. I don't know. And then the first preview came out. I was like, all right, I am intrigued. This could be a lot of fun. I hope it is good.
All right.
Cautiously optimistic. That
they keep doing stuff with those Terminators. It is interesting.
Yeah, it's granted, when you have time travel and you now have overlapping time travels, there is a hysterical parody video out where it's still the same video from the preview, but it's different audio.
Oh.
and so like this speech, he like goes over the timelines, which is awesome. And when he's shaking Reese's hand to send him back in time, you know, the line is, this is really awkward. I really wish you were wearing pants. The first thing that you will do when you get back into the past is get a pair of pants. And then you can do it. So it's like, all right, so I'm optimistic. I'm very optimistic because I grew up with Schwarzenegger films.
Yes.
They were fun.
They were. He was great. He was a ton of fun. I will admit it.
So it's like, please be good. Please.
Do you know who's directing that one? He's not Michael Bay. As long as it's not Michael Bay, he's got a shot.
No, God, no. And it's not McGee, so I'm blanking on who it is. So, not the guy who did Terminator Salvation, which I liked, which I really did like. So I was disappointed that didn't do better in the box office.
Well, the other big one, speaking of directors and a movie that's been around for a long time, of course, the big December movie for next year, a big one that I have a lot of Christmas wishes focused on, and I'm sure a lot of people do, our good friend Judge Chirino certainly does, is the new Star Wars movie. A year from now, we will have seen the new Star Wars movie, and I'm sure we will have done many, many blog posts on the new Star Wars movie.
Like four within 24 hours. So I saw The Hobbit the other night.
Oh, that's right. How was that?
It was, I enjoyed it. That's okay. Another topic entirely.
Yes.
But I saw it in IMAX on 3D, and they had a preview for this 88-second preview for Star Wars.
Ooh. Before.
Okay. It in 3D on IMAX looked phenomenal. When it started, there were cheers and then silence. No one said anything. And when the preview ended, people were cheering and applauding an 88-second preview.
Wow.
The power that had is impressive.
Oh.
This appears to be a movie made for everyone.
Yeah. Well, that's what J.J. Abrams did. He does. He did that with Star Trek. And I think it's good he's doing that with Star Wars. You can't just devote it to the hardcore fans because that's not fair to all the new people and, you know, young people and whatever.
Well, I'm thinking more in the terms of Lucas and directing the prequels towards kids.
Oh, is that who he directed that to? I don't know that he was directing that to anyone besides his own whatever.
There's that.
Marketing, maybe to marketing.
There were kids who really liked Jar Jar. Well, a lot of others who just were appalled by that character.
Yes.
And still all the years later. Now, granted, none of us can articulate the horror that we had over the Christmas special because it was just so extreme and so violated all of us in a very intimate, personal way. But that being said, this is different. And people lit up. Imagine opening night. I mean, this could be true pandemonium.
Yeah, it will be insane.
People will be dressed up, ready to go. And that's beautiful. Because did you read the Mark Hamill interview in, was it Variety or Vanity?
Ooh, no.
Okay, so without giving anything away, he talked about seeing the preview with side-by-side reactions from an audience seeing it in the theater.
Ah.
And the, you know, like the expressions of joy on people's faces, excitement. And it was just this real, humble, wonderful feeling to participate in something that people love that much that connects that well. You know, and this is a story about spaceships and robots and aliens, and people connect to it. It is truly phenomenal.
Yes, it's a story as old as time. As long as there's some Darth Vader has to be worked in there somewhere. I've discussed before my concerns that you don't have Star Wars without Darth Vader. So that's my only concern, but I hope it is wonderful. I hope Lupita Nyong'o has a very big role in it and that women kind of don't get, you know, even though Princess Leia was a great attempt at an idea, she still ended up spending a lot of time waiting around to be rescued by guys. So I'm hoping JJ corrects that in this one.
I think the lead is a female.
What's her name? Daisy?
Daisy. I'm blanking on her last name.
That would be good.
I think she's the lead.
A long way.
They haven't released her last name on the trading cards that came out, but it's probably Solo.
Right. If they haven't released it, it most likely is.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to keep this quiet. Now, unless they want to throw everyone for a loop and have it be Skywalker, which... because JJ likes doing that left hook crazy type of thing. Now, even though it's probably a good bet that she's a Solo, but that way, if they bring in, you know, Jade and everything just by, like, reference. I mean, granted, that's just a wacky theory. She's probably a Solo.
You gotta be prepared for anything.
Yeah, I would. They have to figure out how to create the jaw drop moment that they had in Empire.
Yes.
Now, how do you keep a secret that long that no one, you know, you stay off the internet, and now you got to get the entire planet to take a pledge of we will not tweet any spoilers.
Yes.
And there are some people who seem incapable of that they want to steal scripts and post secrets. And I don't get that. I mean, going to the movie should be a fun experience. There's something about being surprised and getting lost in the story as opposed to we want to be the first to blow the lid off of what they're doing. I can't stand that.
Some people like to be the first to know and the first to tell. On a different note, is Wilson having fun with a toy there?
Yeah. So Wilson, doing his BB-8 impression, has been running around the living room, the giant ottoman that's here, and is now resting on the couch. He looks a lot like the dragon from The NeverEnding Story.
He does, kind of. Wow.
First flying. It's actually quite impressive. So, but yeah, he's, you know, we were outside playing. It was a nice day. And yet he is still play with me, watch me run around. He threw Mr. Turtle across the room, and there we are.
Nice. Well, switching gears for a moment, still talking about pop culture, but from a lawyer's perspective, I have my biggest wish as a lawyer watching lawyers and judges on TV, because I'm also watching Bad Judge, watching those kind of shows on TV, my biggest wish is that just once, for a little itty bit, they show some of the drudgery that really does make up the life of lawyers. We don't get to spend all our time going and doing personal investigations of crime scenes or something. We're not constantly in court doing very dramatic, exciting moments. If we are in court, it's very boring, authenticating documents, you know, impeaching witnesses, that kind of thing. So it would be nice just to show a little bit of the law that I recognize on TV. That'd be my Christmas wish. I know they can't do a lot because it would kill ratings, but just a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a real-time depo. You know, something that'll just melt people's minds. It's like,
can you tell me what your address is? Where did you go to high school? Where did you go to college? What degree did you get in college?
Yeah, and then have the auto-coding set up so that way whenever they say something like, you know, exploding toy or whatever the litigation's about, you know, that's then highlighted in red on the transcript. Yeah,
dum-dum-dum.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You know,
that is the height of excitement.
You know, I've thought about doing a found footage film with document reveal. You know,
found footage, it's like a Blair Witch kind of thing. But,
yeah, somebody's sitting there for 2 hours reading documents.
Like, is this camera frozen? No, it's still on. He just hasn't moved in 2 hours. He's just pushing a little button. Relevant, not relevant. Yeah. Relevant, not relevant.
Oh, look, he's typing. He's explaining how the attorney-client privilege applies to this thing. Oh, wow, this one has the clergy privilege in a text message. When's that happen?
Yeah,
that would melt people's minds if they could see how exciting
the practice of law truly is.
You know, it's just something I'm like, because otherwise it's hard to explain to everybody when I tell them I'm a lawyer that no, my life is like nothing you see on TV.
It's not like Shag. I've never had a gunfight. I've never defused a nuclear bomb.
Yeah. I don't have any judges like Bad Judge who come in wearing all those crazy outfits, but still, heart of gold.
I refuse to watch that one. I absolutely could not do it. Now, I did watch Rake, and I gave Rake...
Oh, that's right. You tried. I was going to try that and never did.
Yeah, I tried Rake and felt very violated, betrayed. And because it started out okay, like, okay, I see where this is. But he just progressively kept getting worse. And the depiction of attorneys and women hit the floor. And like, that's when I had it.
Yes.
So Bad Judge just seemed to have started out in the gutter right out of the gate. So that's...
It is kind of, but it is fun. It's kind of cheesy. But look, I need my sitcoms. I watch my sitcoms a lot and I run out of them. And so I need my sitcoms and I need my... That and running are my two stress reliefs. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, this is part of why I do blogging. This is why I research alienation of affection and see that the controlling case is from Mississippi of... November 2014, which should give everyone pause. But yeah, it's little things like that. Like, what?
Whoa, that's not really my stress. Well, so Josh, one final Christmas wish. Do you have anything, not to put you on the spot? Have we covered everything? Or is there anything else that you would like to wish as we head into, as we wrap up another holiday season, another year, and head into 2015, which I just can't believe.
I would like us to speak at San Diego Comic-Con next year.
Ooh, good wish. I have that wish too.
So that would be my wish. So we'll put together a pitch. I don't know if they'll talk to us, but that would be fun.
That is a very good wish to end on. Well, happy holidays, Josh. You look very dapper. I think you should go out somewhere and actually have a Pimm's cup. I think that's what you should drink if you're wearing that.
I have my little cup of eggnog. So,
no. I'm going to stick with my red wine.
So I'll just, read here from a Christmas carol.
You should be reading a Christmas carol right now.
Well, I happen to have had it out. So, and I did start reading it the other night. So we'll make that. But I do have to say, reading Dickens without practicing it in advance is not recommended.
It's good to know if I ever attempt to read it out loud. I do have to say, I can't remember if I put this in a blog post, but Sydney Carleton from, Tale of Two Cities, I blanked out for a second, is my favorite lawyer of all time. So I don't know if I've ever put that on a blog post, but I love Sydney Carleton.
You have not, but let's read the last paragraph from page 100 of A Christmas Carol.
He had
no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle. Ever afterwards, and it was said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
And I have chills. Thank you, Josh, for that send-off.
God bless us, Jessica. God bless us, everyone. Stay geeky, America, and Merry Christmas.